Welcome to the Lost Together podcast with Matt Wardlaw.
What do you know? Look what it is. We are back, finally, with another new podcast. Sorry that it's been a few weeks since the last one. We've actually had a few shows ready to go, and the proverbial life got in the way. Being here in Cleveland last week got a little bit busy as the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction ceremonies were coming up, and after that was over on Friday night, I found myself replacing both the cable modem and the router at the home office on Saturday. So I guess you could say this whole delay has been sponsored by technical difficulties. But enough about all that. I'm very excited about this week's show, which features somebody I've wanted to talk to for a long time now. I'm pleased to welcome Mark Mulcahy as my guest for this week, which also marks the 15th episode of this podcast. As the years pass, time seems to bring about reunions that you never thought you'd see happen. Miracle Legion was definitely one of those bands, so it was really cool to see the news hit my inbox that the band would be getting back together to play a short series of reunion shows. The lineup's going to feature Mark, of course, and fellow founding member Mr. Ray Neal on guitar, Dave McCaffrey on bass, and drummer Scott Boudier. Both of those guys, the last two, joined the band in the late 80s and appeared on the group's next two records. The tour dates are scheduled to start July 13th in Providence, Rhode Island, and there are currently a total of 8 U.S. dates scheduled, including Albany, Brooklyn, New York, Boston, Chicago, and a few other markets, wrapping up in Iowa at the Codfish Hollow Barn on July 23rd. In August, they'll take things overseas for an additional 5 shows. I'll put a link to the complete tour dates in the show notes for this episode, which you can find at popdose.com and losttogetherpod.com. This weekend, the band's going to reissue their 1996 album Portrait of Damaged Family on vinyl for the first time as part of Record Store Day. The album has been freshly remastered and will feature a bonus track. Let's take a listen to one of my favorite tracks from the record. This song is called Accidentally on Purpose, and you'll hear Mark talk about it during our interview.
She entered the door just in a bathrobe. I said the usual collecting and...
There you have it, a quick taste of Portrait of a Damaged Family, the 1996 album from Miracle Legion, which is going to be reissued on vinyl for the first time this weekend, as I mentioned, as part of Record Store Day. They're going to follow that special release by making the entire Miracle Legion catalog available digitally on Monday, April 18th, which is great news for music fans. As you're probably aware, and especially if you've become familiar with the band in recent years, their material is not incredibly easy to track down in the digital realm. The stuff that is available is pretty scattered. Thanks to these digital reissues, their body of work will finally be easily available in one place. In the following interview, Mark and I discussed the Portrait of a Damaged Family record and what was going on with the band at the time that the album was released. It was a complicated period, to say the least, and I really, really enjoy this record, which is one that when you hear the circumstances behind how it came to be, it's a bit of a miracle, pardon the pun, that we're even listening to this record. We also discussed the work that he did with the band Polaris in the 90s, which was an offshoot project that was formed specifically to create music for the Nickelodeon series The Adventures of Pete and Pete. Additionally, we talk about the experiences that Miracle Legion had recording at Paisley Park on the Me and Mr. Ray record, and later, their experience working with John Porter on the Drenched record. We had a good chat, and Mark had some great stories. If this is your first exposure to Mark and his music, I'd urge you to check out the website for his record label, which is at mezzotint.com. That's M-E-Z-Z-O, tent, T-I-N-T.com. You're going to find plenty of information about Miracle Legion, Polaris, and Mark's solo music there. Also, check out the Chow My Shining Star compilation, a stunning tribute to Mark's music that was released in 2009 on Shout Factory as a charity tribute to benefit Mark and his family. He had lost his wife suddenly in 2008, and an impressive group of musical folks turned out to do their part to help Mark move forward. We're talking folks like Michael Stipe from REM, Tom York from Radiohead, Frank Black of the Pixies, The National, Dinosaur Jr., lots of other folks and bands. There's a 3-disc version of the album that's available digitally that will give you plenty to listen to. And as we've discussed, with all of this music from Miracle Legion coming back out, you should have no problem keeping your ears occupied. Thanks for listening and checking out the Lost Together podcast. You can follow us on Twitter and Facebook at Lost Together Pod. Our website is at losttogetherpod.com. Email us, losttogetherpod@gmail.com. And you'll find show notes, episode archives, all that stuff at the website. Plus, you can subscribe via the RSS feed or iTunes. Pick your poison. Now, let's get into today's episode. I hope you enjoy it.
Well, it's, I guess starting off, it's cool to be talking about Miracle Legion again. This is like another one of those great unexpected events that seems to come around a lot these days with the passage of time. And I mean, that's got to be pretty cool for you also.
It was, you know, it's cool for me to see other bands do it. for me, I don't know. I haven't done it yet. So I haven't, you know, just right now it's just an idea. We haven't actually done anything other than playing it, or nobody's played any music yet, so that's the main part of it all.
Still, with shows on the calendar, I would think, I mean, you've gone that far to like make it real enough that, you know, it's certainly something that, I guess, when are you guys going to get together to kind of start rehearsing for those dates?
We're supposed to meet up in a couple of weeks, just to have a kind of trial run of things and see what it sounds like.
Cool.
And assuming that all sounds like something, then we'll, you know, once we get, you know, near the shows, we'll probably do some more intense practice. But
is everybody pretty spread apart, like location wise, at this point?
I live relatively close to the bass player and the drummer, but the guitar player lives in Edinburgh, so that's the.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
That's the thing about getting together, it requires somebody flying somewhere.
Well, Record Store Day is going to find you guys reissuing the Portrait of a Damaged Family album, and that record obviously marking 20 years this year. And I know that sometimes going back to something like this, which in a nutshell, I guess it was kind of the last gasp of a complicated journey for that band, it can dredge up a lot of different feelings. So I kind of wondered what it was like for you going back to this material as you guys kind of worked on preparing this record for release.
Well, for me, I got involved with the whole thing because, I decided to start my own record label I just didn't want to keep, trying to find somebody else. And so, you know, I started the record label when I finally was free to start my own record label, which I was kind of legally mixed up for a while. And then that was a record that we had made in this period where we were kind of signed to a label but unable to make records. And so we had this record all done, and I didn't really know a lot about it, you know. I was just so eager to do it, to have something come out, because it had been such a long time since we had released a record. And anyway, so there was this record of a ton of songs, and we cut a few out, but put a lot in. And so this, first of all, putting it on vinyl is always, for me, the more normal way to make a record.
Mm-hmm.
And secondly, it was just sort of a chance to, you know, make the record a little, I think, a little better, you know, because it's a little bit shorter. You know, I mean, I like all the songs and everything, you know, that were on it. And but, you know, sometimes, you know, a lot of times you record more than you need, and then end up kind of editing out the things that are maybe not as good. So anyway, it was a chance to kind of re-edit the record and make it into maybe a better album, and also an album, you know, kind of two things, a better record and a better album, and an album itself. So like the art form of the album, I think, is a great way to express yourself. And so anyway, yeah, it was nice to get a whack at the whole thing again, really. You know, you don't usually get that chance, you know.
What were kind of your thoughts like as you, you know, kind of went back to this material 20 years later?
Well, you know, it really was too, because I don't typically listen to, you know, that many of my records that I made. I'd rather make another one, but so it was, you know, it was surprising. You know, it was a surprise to hear the way I would put things lyrically. It was a surprise to hear the sort of approach to the recording, the sounds and the different, you know, things. But I was really happy with sort of how hard we had worked on. I didn't remember it because it maybe didn't seem like hard work at the time, but we worked very hard at you know, sort of fleshing out each song in the recording and making it, as sort of full as it could be, with singing and instrumentation and things like that. So there's a lot of good parts on this record. You know, it's a lot of I don't know what the word I'm looking for. Just a lot of good orchestration, I suppose, is the best word, you know?
Well, it is. I mean, that was one thing that was kind of interesting to me, is like, you know, like the Surprise, Surprise, Surprise record, that's on Bandcamp, so that's something that's kind of easily accessible at this point. So that was kind of when I was on the fly and just picking a random Miracle Legion record to kind of go back to, that was kind of the one that I, you know, went to because it was immediately accessible to me at that moment. And it's really interesting to hear the contrast of what the band sounded like on that record compared to where things wound up on the Portrait record. And, you know, the Surprise record, it feels like one that sonically benefits from the era which it was recorded. And, you know, thanks to the sound and the compression, I mean, the album definitely has a feeling of a certain time. You can hear that it is of the time that it was recorded, but it also serves like the overall sound of the band really well. And I kind of wondered, you know, when you look back at how the band evolved, like, you know, how it all feels to you when you kind of look back at the catalog of where you guys started and where you guys kind of ended up.
You know, picking those two records is probably a good way to think about how we are, is that, because, you know, our records are never sort of we didn't release that many records, so
right,
good space between them, so you can kind of, you know, get see some chronology of what the way people were making records in our catalog. And so yeah, that Surprise is very thick and heavy and you know, sort of slightly sludgy, and the songs are really long and but that's, you know, that's what was happening. And so then this record, Portrait, is a lot more kind of, you know, kind of a slick, some sounds that are maybe too slick, but it's, you know, it's kind of produced in a way, you know, that I wouldn't now produce anything. But so they, you know, they definitely show, like you said, they definitely show when you can tell when they were made. which is, you know, good in its own weird kind of way. but I don't know, you know, I don't know. I mean, we were part of, I always thought we were part of, you know, whatever was happening at the time. And in the era when we were a band, things changed a lot as you know, as up until like, the Beatles were making records, things were kind of similar, and it was a rock and roll record. And then people try to, you know, there's a lot of producers and a lot of attempts at making, you know, stamping something with something. And so, you know, we were part of that. And so when you listen to the record, you're going to definitely hear that. So when I hear it, I you know, I know that's what I sounded like. So I'm happy about that. But when I you know, think about how I do it now, I wouldn't do it that way. You know what I mean? It's a, I don't really, you know, I wouldn't make a record that sounded like that in that way. I wouldn't approach it that way. I just, you know, I just approach it differently now. So, I mean, we spent, you know, you'd spend like all day getting a drum sound, you know, for example. And no, I would never do that. I would say, look, say, you know, don't even use that many mics on drums anymore. So, it's just a lot simpler and easier now, I think.
I was
more like what it was before, you know, before the Beatles came around. You know?
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, I think that's kind of the benefit. I guess the benefit and the hindrance in a way is that, like, obviously, like, you know, with, you know, as you're making records in the 80s, you know, and you move forward to making records in the 90s and you move forward into making records now, it's like there's different things available at each, you know, stop that weren't available, you know, in that previous era. And it's like there's, you know, good things and bad things. And certainly, as you say, like now these days, it's like you don't have to spend a day or two getting drum sounds. Now it's like a lot easier to dial all that stuff in. So,
or just, you know, like Ray was really, using a lot of digital, you know, and a lot of processed sounds. And, you know, they sounded really good at the time somehow because they were probably a new thing, in like a Quadriverb or a Roland, you know, JC-120 and these kind of things that were, you know, just not what you think of now as being cool. At the time, seemed great because they were, you know, just really different than what had come before them. So you just get kind of trapped into buying the new thing, and it sounds like the thing, and then maybe later on it wasn't quite the thing. you know, it's like, I don't know, buying a car that seemed cool that wasn't that cool. So, but having said that, you know, that's the record we made, and I'm happy to, you know, I'm happy to stand behind it, I suppose, you know.
At the time that you guys were working on this, you know, stuff for the album that, you know, becomes the Portrait record, how much overlap was there at the time that you're working on that stuff and the time that you kind of got involved in the Polaris stuff for Nickelodeon?
You know, I'm not the, you know, super best historian, but you mean actually recording Portrait?
Yeah, because I guess I was kind of curious, like, because I feel like I hear kind of like a little bit of influence from that Polaris experience creeping back into this material. So I kind of wondered if I was, you know, correct in hearing it that way.
No, I'm pretty sure it was the other way around because we made that record kind of as a grudge fuck because we were all ready to make a record. And then the label we were on said, you know, we're not making any records. And so
Right. We
were just, you know, we were just like on the precipice of ready to go. We had everything written. We, you know, we had kind of holed up for a couple of months in this place and written everything and worked it all out. And we were just ready to, you know, we were gung-ho. And then nothing for probably, like, I'd say close to a year of, like, trying to figure out what to do. And then we just said, look, let's just go make the record without, you know, we had some wherewithal of being able to go to the studio kind of near where we were. And so we went in and made the record. And but there was, it was like we made it and then just put it away. Nobody had any, we didn't really have any intention of, it was kind of weird to make a record that you know you're not going to put out particularly.
Yeah.
But made it and then it went in a box and then eventually we were able to, you know, start the label and get it out. And then we pulled it back out again. And it was pretty crazy sounding, to be honest with you. And then this other guy that had nothing to do with it came in and mixed it. He had not worked on it at all and just put everything up and listened to it with a real set of fresh ears. And this guy, his name is Tom Buckland. He made quite a lot out of getting rid of some stuff that was in the way of other things, and really kind of mixed it into something better, you know. So and so there it was. And then in that time, sort of everybody had fizzled off into the other things they were doing, which was, you know, joining other bands and starting a family. And somewhere in there, I got the Polaris job. But I think in my head, we had already, maybe the first bit of the Polaris recordings were done in that same space of that year of nothingness, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The 2 years of nothingness, you know, it was 1 year of nothingness, 1 year of making a record, and maybe I was, because the Polaris stuff was recorded 4 songs at a time over 3 years. That record was made for, you know, just for the TV schedule. So it's, you know, the first four was just me and Scott. Scott played drums, and I somehow ended up playing everything else. And then the other ones were made more with the actual Polaris band, as you would see. But so, yeah, I'm not sure the chronology. It's all right around the same zone. And I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, doing stuff, for me anyway, doing stuff on Polaris, that's the first time I ever did everything myself. I hadn't, you know, I'd always worked with Ray, and, you know, he and I and the four of us really were just a partnership. But I don't know. I don't know what creeped into what. I mean, I guess everything creeped in there because I only know one thing. So, I don't know. I don't know if that answers the question.
It does, absolutely. Experience-wise, what was the experience like for you, you know, working on that, writing music for television, getting into that arena of things?
It was interesting to write, to order, you know, to write what somebody wanted in a way. But the guy that wanted it was a really cool, great guy, and he knew a lot about music, and we got on very well as fans of music, and so it was easy to work with him because he, you know, he knew what he wanted. He already liked what I already did, so we kind of had an easy relationship. So, you know, on the one hand, it was, I want a song like this, I want a song like this, I want a song like this, and I want a song like this. And I said, oh, okay, you know. but it was still, the lucky break for me was that it was still to write a song. It wasn't just to write, just soundtrack music. It still was write four songs.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that I knew, I mean, that I pretty much knew how to do is to write songs that way with lyrics, which I don't think is the normal, you know, the normal gig is to not write lyrics and stuff. So I just wrote a song, and then I would just break it up in a million ways, and they would have all sorts of, you know, bits of songs and harmonica parts and just the drums and just the music. And, you know, it was really a pleasure. You know, I was really lucky to fall into it because I was, you know, floundering. The group was pretty much over, and that's all I had done really musically. So I was really kind of flopping around wondering what I was going to do. And, you know, doing that gave me the sort of, the idea that I could do my own, just be under my own name, and that's probably generally how that got started.
Did the experience of doing that, is that something that opened interesting doors for you going forward, like elsewhere in the television business? Were you able to continue to like do that kind of work?
Not really, you know. I don't know. I wish I would like to, you know. I don't know who else it would be with, but I'd like to do that. But it doesn't seem to quite work that way, you know. I don't know why, but. No, not really.
Well,
I did a couple songs for a couple of different movies, but never really got the chance to write a theme song again. Which I did. When I did that, I didn't realize like what a kind of great kind of brass ring that is to write a theme song for a TV show.
Yeah,
it's just a great, great job. You know, if you can, because that one, you know, turned out to be really, you know, very, very popular with people. I mean, I have no idea why, but it was a very it's a very popular song. So. It's just great, you know, to, like when I did this radio show and said, you know, I'm going to play your favorite TV theme. And, I said, I love Maud, you know?
Yeah.
So like, they're like stuck in your head. So like right off the top of my head, and not that she play your favorite one. And I had no idea that Maud was my favorite one at the time, but somehow that's the first one that came to my mind. And I had no problem singing it. And it was just really, really funny feeling to think how much those theme songs are burned into your brain.
Oh, totally. You know, and it's cool because it sounds like it was a very positive experience for you, which I think you know that there are plenty of, like, say, music guys that, like, are in bands that have gotten roped in to do a theme song or whatever for television, and they walk away with a negative feeling because there were so many, like, compromises that they made, and it doesn't really seem like you had to, like, sell your soul artistically when it came to creating this stuff.
No, not at all. And, you know, to add to that was that I was actually just talking to Will today or yesterday. You know, they never really paid attention to that show. So they and me, I guess, got away with whatever. They just didn't notice it. And they were smaller then. It wasn't like, you know, what it is now. So I think they just wanted content on there. It's probably like the way it is with a lot of things. They just want stuff to put on the air, and they didn't really care what you did. So that was pretty sweet. Yeah.
Well, question for you, because in addition to the Record Store Day reissue of the Portrait record, I know that you're going to reissue the rest of the catalog digitally, and I kind of wondered if you could talk a little bit about that. Like, is that other stuff going to be at Bandcamp as well? And, like, kind of, you know, what can folks look forward to?
Yeah, all the records that Miracle Legion made, I think all the... I think we're trying to get every little... Well, probably not every little thing, but... close to every little thing that ever came out should be available, you know, by the time, by the 18th. I think some of it's a little sticky, but I think we're able to go ahead with just about everything. I wasn't thinking about doing that particularly, because I just didn't know, but this whole... It all started with the fact that Mezzotint was 20 years old, and we thought, let's re-release the first record we ever made on vinyl, you know, on Record Store Day, and it all had this kind of sweet thing to it. And then because we had got Polaris going, and we were sort of all three of us were playing together, it just sort of had this other than another thing came about where maybe we should play together, and so it's all been kind of an organic. Sweet thing, and everything seems to lead to the next thing, which is, you know, now maybe we could get all, you know, because it's always nice to have your records be at least available if somebody wants to hear them. I don't know how many people do, but you know, we've had such a messy career of being on one label and another label and another label, and
yeah,
you know, it's never been really clean, so. If we can get it all together and all in one place and all available, that would just be almost like something you could tick off, you know, your list of things you wish would happen, you know.
For sure. And, I mean, there are obviously, like, pros and cons to, like, digital and streaming and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, like, I think that obviously as music fans, even though, like, I'm a physical media kind of guy, I'm getting more and more used to, like, you know, sometimes looking for stuff on the fly. So I know that, like, say, I'm an Apple Music subscriber, so it's like... when I just kind of got the urge to, like, listen to some Miracle Legion, it was like, you know what, like, let's punch into Apple Music and see what's available. And, you know, a couple things came up. So then it's like you Google and there's the surprise, surprise, surprise record on Bandcamp. And, so I completely understand. That's kind of like, I guess one of the, things that folks run into is that, like, when there's a band like yours, like, that has, like, records spread out across a lot of different labels over the years, there can be some weird holes. So, I mean, I know that, like, artistically and for the fans, like, it's very gratifying to be able to get, like, your complete picture back out there and easily accessible to folks, you know, to be able to readily get in one form or another.
Sure. I mean, you know, because of the era we were in, you know, we're largely, you know, invisible on the, you know, in the digital, like, YouTube world or something. There just isn't much to find about us. There's probably a few clips here and there, but not much. Everybody wasn't filming everything and everybody wasn't taking pictures. So the idea that you can hear this stuff, hear the records as they are, I think is great. But like as far as Mezzotint goes, you know, so far we've released three vinyl records. My first solo record and the Polaris record and, you know, and the Portrait record. So hopefully, you know, it's just a crazy expense to get them out. But, I mean, I'm hoping now that they're all available in this digital way that it'd be nice to just kind of go through that list and try to, you know, release each one on vinyl again. You know, that would be some of them that came from vinyl. And obviously the early stuff was vinyl and cassette in those days. So, I know what you mean. It would be nice to, it's just nice to have a real thing. You know, I feel the same. I know that's, you know, because of where I came up from, but I still think a record, you know, it's a better experience, you know, to listen to a record in my head because you're more involved. You're just more, it's like putting a movie on or something. You're just more, you know, you have to turn it over and all that stuff that maybe it's too much of a headache for people, but if I put a CD on or if I have something or I just put on my, I don't have any, I hate listening to things randomly. Like,
yeah,
when it's random, you know, like, I don't know, maybe that's all right for stuff. I don't know. But if it's something I know, I don't want to listen to it in some, you know, that's not, I want to listen to the whole thing, you know?
That's always been my argument as a music fan, is that is one thing that's cool about the vinyl experience, is it, like, I think that the experience of having to, like, get up and flip the record over at some point, it actually keeps you engaged and obviously listening to the album. And, you know, you're also kind of locked in, unless you lift the needle, you're locked into listening to it in the way that they intended. So I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I listened mainly, but with David Thomas about the art form of vinyl, you know, and the album and all that. And, you know, this is what the artist intended for you to do. His contention is that the listener is not qualified to decide anything. And, you know, that may be slightly, that's probably kind of right. I don't know if they have to be not qualified, but at least you should at least be, here's the art, you know, as I think it should be. And, you know, that's what you're paying for. You know, if you like the artist, then you want to know what the artist wanted you to do. So, anyway, something like that.
David's one of those guys that he's the artist that, like, you know, if he had none of his stuff available digitally, you would completely understand considering the source. So,
well, he managed to get his stuff out there over and over again, though. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Somebody always wants to put it out, you know?
Yep.
And, yeah.
You talked about, like, the impact that this band, you know, made and kind of how, like, you guys missed YouTube and all that kind of stuff. But it had to be interesting to you to see the footprint that this band did make when that Chow My Shining Star compilation came out. Because, I mean, that really showed, like, the, you know, the folks that your music had reached.
Oh, dude, that was, you know, that was just one of the more beautiful surprises of my life. That was... just that it was being made at all, and mm-hmm. also just to, you know, it's like, that was like my It's a Wonderful Life, you know, lesson, that you don't have any idea what's happening, what you're doing, until somebody tells you, you know, what you've done or what you're doing or what effect you're having on anybody. So, yeah, that was pretty great, you know.
I mean, the fact that, like... Because my wife and I geeked out when Shout Factory, you know, put out the initial, like, one CD version. But then when we found out that, like, there was, like, the deluxe version that added, like, another two CDs worth of stuff. I mean, that's heavy stuff. So, very cool.
You know, they were turning people down, man. It was kind of like there's just not enough time for any more people. But, yeah, people I had no idea. You know, I don't know Elvis Perkins at all, you know. So, it's it's pretty nice. Or the National. You know, I don't know those guys. That's nice.
So... looking back at some other career stuff, how did the band end up recording at Paisley Park for the Me and Mr. Ray record?
Well, you know, when we were on Rough Trade, which was a great, great, great label, anything was possible with them, and you just had to suggest it. And then they would try to make it happen. You know, if you said, I want to make a record, they would say, okay, great, you know, what do you want to do? And then we'd say this, and they'd say, okay, let's try to... you know, let's try to make that happen somehow. And so I guess, I don't really remember saying, how about if we go to Paisley Park, but I think somebody did. And, you know, it was a completely, just, you know, strangely affordable, easy thing to do. We just, you know, flew out to Minnesota and stayed there for a week. And, yeah, it was really, really great. And, you know, it's another strange thing that just happened, you know. Things used to just happen, man. I don't know. I wasn't like a dumbbell rock star particularly, but I didn't really know how everything was happening, and I didn't really think about it. It just would happen, and I would do it, and that was just, like, taken for granted that that's what you were going to do. You know?
Well, I think you guys were probably like a lot of bands that, like, you know, you were focused on like working and writing songs and getting things done. It's like you don't have a lot of time at that time to like stop down and think about what's happening or how it's all happening. I mean, a lot of it seems like for a lot of artists ends up being kind of a blur.
Yeah, and you know, we had a manager then, and he was, you know, he was just working on all that stuff, and you just kind of, you know, go where you're told a little bit, you know. So yeah, it's nice. Like, those are good times.
Were there any good stories from working within Prince's world?
Well, he was there a couple of times, so, you know, you walk past him, you're like, what's up, Prince? You know, so that in itself, or him having some, you know, him going out, mainly anything to do with him, you know, he's such a, you know, mythical person that you, just watching him go out the door was like, and get in his car and come back later, you're like, wow, I wonder where he went, you know?
Right. Or,
but there was one thing, there was one little bit of like I'm looking at this like a sort of library cart full of tapes. It's just like looking at these different tapes, and this woman says, don't look at that. So it was, you know, it was like a little, just like you think it would be, you know, little Princey. But no, being there, you know, there's three studios and you move around from one to the other, and, yeah, it was just really, yeah, it's just a real regular place, man. He's a guy that set up a great, he has like there's a huge hangar there where you can practice, and the Muppets were practiced, like the Muppet Broadway or the touring Muppet show was practicing, so there was, you know, Muppets all over the place, and
yeah,
it was pretty great week, you know, to be actually making a record in a sort of weird circus like that, and then every once in a while Prince would show up, you know, it's surreal, I suppose.
I mean, just the fact that you can mention Muppets in the same sentence, you know, related to your band, that's pretty cool. That's a cool highlight.
And he was driving, if you remember the Alphabet City video, but he was driving that Thunderbird with the suicide doors.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
I was always parked in front, and he'd hop in and take off. I was like, man, because that's such a great car. You know, it's an amazing, amazingly weird car to own, you know. So, yeah, anyway, yeah. Yeah, I guess there's plenty to think about. It's a real juicy memory, you know?
Yeah, for sure. What made you guys want to work with John Porter for the Drench record?
Well, I think, you know, we were pretty starry-eyed about the fact that he did the Smiths.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, you know, and he was in Roxy Music, so he has a pretty good, you know, he had a pretty good pedigree in my head. I don't know that it was, like, the best choice in some ways, but he's a nice guy and everything. I don't know that, like, you know, if you analyze it better up front, you'd realize that he really wasn't such a vocals kind of producer. He's much more of a guitar guy, because, you know, Johnny Morris and Morrissey are, you know, and, you know, our band was at least equal, you know, guitars. And so I never really felt like, I always had this thing where the vocals were getting kind of a, you know, like the back seat, and that was just kind of weird. So it was a little bit weird, but it was also, you know, the same thing. We were in Los Angeles and recording every day for 6 weeks, and I would never think about remotely complaining about that. Although I don't know who would have been a better producer. I had never also never really had a producer before like that.
Mm-hmm.
But that was just kind of like a little bit too, I don't know, young or naive or something about how to deal with the whole thing, you know. But yeah, he's. I don't know what he does now. He's still producing records. I have no idea.
Well, just a few more things, and I guess, like, looking at the Portrait record itself, I wanted to ask about a few songs on the record and kind of get your thoughts and memories, anything that comes to mind as far as recording them or otherwise. And I guess starting with Accidentally on Purpose.
That's just, you know, if I remember that song, it's sort of a collection of of things that happen, you know, things I saw happen or things that happened to me that I just kind of thought, you know, you wonder if you meant it or didn't, sort of something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Access purpose. And, but the recording of that to me, I think it was just kind of a bunch of made up stuff in terms of the song makes sense to me, but I don't know that it actually has a real solid, you know, connection, plot-wise. but I love the recording. I love the singers, and everything about like the vocal. That's why I had to do a couple times before we put it out. And I really think that's just that song is just full of life, man. It's just a really good recording. You know?
Yeah, and I was going to ask, is there a good story on the singers on the track? Who are they?
Oh, they're a band from New Haven called the Hoo Hoos.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, they were some really great chicks who can really belt it out, you know. They were well into it. We had a great time recording with them. You know, they're really, I think they're still around, but they had a good vibe. You know, the three of them had a real good thing going, and they were just really fun and eager. You know, like we all knew each other, so it was wasn't like anybody hired or anything. It was like a real friendly, you know, family type thing. So I still couldn't remember that.
Yeah, and that tune has, like, a cool swagger to it, and they kind of push it over the top, and you can just kind of hear that, like, it sounds like everybody had fun recording that one.
Yeah, they bring the sassy, you know, and it's, like, really, you know, really helps, really makes it. Without that, I think it would be, like, a kind of a sludgy rock tune, you know?
Yep.
That soul, you know, with them on it.
I mean, Gone to Bed at 21 is another one that, like, I always, like, when I hear that tune, like, that's just such a great song title.
Yeah, that's, you know, that's funny because, you know, that's a song obviously about, you know, it's a Civil War song, but it's about a guy going to war to impress everybody. And, I have this song that I have on my own, called Don't Talk Crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I put out a little, it's out, so you can get it on iTunes, but it's really, I haven't really recorded it the best way yet. It came out in this poetry book. But it's the same idea, you know. And I'm telling you, man, it's just, that song just, you can't stop crying if you hear that song. So it's the same. I'm still feeling bad to those guys that have to go to war, I guess. But
yeah.
that song, I really am pleased and proud of that song, you know.
What other songs kind of come to mind when you think about this record?
Well, I like Screaming. You know, that's my favorite song on it. You know, that's sort of like, I don't know. I forget the guy's name, but it's got that kind of nice, it's got a nice swing to it, and I just like the whole vibe.
Mm.
And, yeah, I love that song. I like, I don't know if, I like Madison Park, you know.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's another one that's kind of stuck out.
But, you know, I kind of tend to evaluate them from the standpoint of, how do I like the recording? And I, you know, that's good. And then I'm pleased with myself for what I was able to, you know, write about whatever the subject was. You know, because sometimes you hear yourself and you're like, man, I wish I had worked a little harder on that, you know, lyrically. but that's what it seemed like, you know. Everything that you ever do, everything that I ever did or that, you know, is done, I imagine myself doing the best I could at the time, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, listen to it later on, you're like, shit, man, I wish I did a little better. but I don't have, you know, I don't look at it with a regret, but I do, you know, sometimes think, shit, I wish I was a little smarter, you know, or something with that. Third verse. That's the tough one, but anyway, I mean, those are the songs that stick out in my head, I guess.
Overall, when you look back at this band, are you, you know, happy with what you guys were able to accomplish with the records that you made?
Yeah, I mean, I obviously wish we'd made more, you know. I guess,
yeah.
Orson Welles, where we spent too much time looking to make a record and not making one, but I wish we'd made a lot of records, because we could have. But we just got stuck, and, you know, we got stuck too many times. I'm happy with the records we made. They're certainly, at least in their own little world, they're certainly iconic records. You know, there's not too many people that know what they are. They're not forgotten to people who like them, you know. So
yeah, exactly.
I know they were lost in the shuffle of whatever the particular shuffle was, but I know that we, you know, made good records. That's what I would imagine about myself. That when we went to make them, we were very serious and tried, you know, very hard to make the best records with what we had, you know, with what we knew how to do. You know, I think we did pretty well, because, you know, none of us knew how to do it until we started doing it. So we had a certain bit of luck with some of the songs we wrote were just, I think, very kind of universal, that people really liked the songs, and then somehow we were able to not... a lot of times I think when you record, you know, you have to just, a lot of it is just get out of the way and not ruin it, you know, just let the thing be good when it's good and stop when it, you know, when it's done. And so, you know, we've made some mistakes on that, but a lot of times we're smart enough to quit while we were ahead, you know. It's a shame when you ruin a song. You have a good song and you go to record it and it just didn't quite do it right, you know, somehow. But yeah, generally, overall, I'd say, yeah, I would, even Glad, I'll stick behind that one, you know, which is very, that when someone asked me, what about Glad? I was like, yeah, what about Glad? What was that for? Why would anyone make that record? But that was Rough Trade. We said, we want to make this ridiculous record. Like, great, let's go do it.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Well, for you guys, I mean, basically coming out of New Haven, Connecticut, like, you know, it's funny because I talk to, like, a lot of bands, particularly, like, say, bands that are, like, say, overseas in the UK or Scotland or whatever the case is, that, like, they talk about, like, you know, being teenagers and all that kind of stuff and dreaming of, like, say, going to America. So, like, what would you say were the dreams that, like, the band that becomes Miracle Legion had, like, outside of Connecticut? Like, you know, I think that, like, these days, like, musicians, it's like they have access to Facebook and all this other stuff, and it's a lot easier to kind of start making your path. And it's like, obviously back in like 1983, it was a lot more manual. So I kind of wondered, you know, how much of a struggle it was for you guys creatively to start like hashing it out and figuring out how to get where you guys wanted to get to.
Well, you know, two things kind of come to mind to answer that would be that you know, we put out a couple of things, and we Ray and I were a duo to start, and so we made these recordings on a four track that we had, and we just started sending them around. It was like that kind of, we had that kind of beginnings where we didn't really have any aspirations particularly, you know.
Yeah.
We weren't really trying to do anything other than to, you know, just have this duo and you know, just kind of make up stuff and record it. And so we sent a lot of it to England. We sent it to guys that because Ray was really kind of an Anglophile, and he knew a lot about, like, you know, sounds and NME and all that stuff. So we would send it to guys that we thought were cool, and they, you know, they reacted. You know, they were like, oh, wow, look at this cassette we just got from these cool guys. And they would play, like, a 10-minute song on the radio or review it or something. And so we had this kind of weird, innocent luck, you know, that all of a sudden, you know, we were definitely not like popular, but we had something going in England right off the bat. And so when we made The Backyard, you know, then it's sort of even like Ian Townsend was like, hey, you guys are all right. And we're like, oh, you think so? Yeah. So we started to get it together. We got the band. We had the first incarnation of the band and made a record and had a label in England kind of really quickly making Waves. And they brought us over to tour. So we just had this kind of strange luck of all of a sudden these things are happening. We thought, oh, look how it works. Great, you know, it just kind of happens. And, you know, then you learn it doesn't quite happen. It doesn't sustain itself happening. But we had a great start like that where we were just kind of off to the races without really trying, which, and then we had to try, you know, for the rest of the time, all we did was try. But the beginning, you know, a couple of years were really sweet, you know, really nice and you know, easy in a lot of ways. You know, we and all of a sudden I'm touring, you know, all over the place, and that was really an amazing experience because I really hadn't been anywhere, you know, and all of a sudden I was in, you know, England, or I was in, even to be in Tennessee or something was, I'd never been to Tennessee, so all that stuff was really thrilling, you know, just a great, great piece of excitement, you know, and it gave us the chance to, because before we were, Ray and I, especially before we were really in our own band, we'd been in other bands, but we booked a lot of shows around New Haven, brought a lot of bands into New Haven, and so, you know, we had this kind of, you know, kind of inside bird's eye view of touring bands and you know, booking agents and all the stuff that I didn't really know about riders and you know, even sound checks and all these things that were, you know, just stuff that I know now, but I didn't know. And so I learned a lot of things that I could kind of plug into the experience that started to happen to us, you know. And it was all this kind of, it became this whole thing that I all of a sudden knew about. And then now that's what I'm still doing.
Yeah, very cool. Besides this Miracle Legion activity that you've got on deck for the year, like, what else is kind of on your schedule of stuff that you're, you know, working on?
Well, you know, I've been working on a couple of different records of my own, so I'm hoping that sometime by the fall I have another record of my own out, and I kind of want to get back to that. I got off the track of that doing Polaris, and now I'm kind of back off the track again doing Miracle Legion, but I'm going to try to do both things at once, and I wish I was, you know, smarter or more industrious, but I'm trying to keep it all going. You know, somehow I got all these things going again, and that's been great. But I just don't know how to balance everything, so I'm just trying to keep it all.
Yeah.
I just would like to put more new music out. You know, Polaris was an old thing, and Miracle Legion was an older thing, so I would either be nice to make it, maybe make a Miracle Legion record if that seems like a thing that made sense, but just something that's, you know, new music and not, you know, not re-releases and stuff.
Yeah, for what we talked about at the head of the conversation, I mean, it sounds like obviously first you have to get together in a room with the Miracle Legion guys and, you know, see what shows are going to look like before you look at anything else.
Well, I talked to the drummer this morning, and I said, you know, people say, you know, why did you do it? Why are you guys doing this? And he goes, we haven't done anything yet. said, right. He goes, tell them we haven't done anything yet. It's like, right, okay, I'll tell them.
Nice.
Because we haven't, and you know, I don't have any you know, dark cloud about it, but I don't know if it doesn't sound good. You know, I really don't. I don't see myself dragging something that doesn't sound good all around the world.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. All right, man. Well, thank you so much for taking the time on this, and it's like I said, it's really cool to have all this stuff coming out in one place, and you know, having it accessible. So you know, excited to see where it goes from here.
Thanks, man. Yeah. Where do you live?
I'm in Cleveland, so, and as it happens, I've got a conflict the night that you guys are going to be in Chicago.
That's the closest one to you, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So,
if you're really super industrious, you want to make the Codfish Hollow thing, which is I think the day before or the day after that.
Yeah,
it was a great gig, man. You know,
I was looking at that. Yeah, as soon as I saw that we had something going on the night that you guys were in Chicago, I was like, man, what are the other options? I was like, oh, I've never been to Iowa, so that's possible.
It's just a beautiful, I'm not trying to talk into anything, but it's a beautiful gig. It's a barn in the middle of absolutely nowhere, you know?
Oh, cool, yeah.
Like, it's Field of Dreams, you know? So if you had nothing to do and were super industrious, it's a really good time, you know?
There you go. Well, hey, we all like good adventure, but thanks for the time, man, and, you know, good luck on all this.
Okay, see you again.
All right, see ya. Bye.